K through 12 school district professionals and staff members are kind of in a very vulnerable place right now because a federal program under the CARES Act, which was designed to help elementary and secondary schools across the country navigate the impacts of COVID, it's going to expire. It's leaving schools less equipped to make the technology investments they need in order to operate efficiently. And not to mention, we're still dealing with a lot of staffing shortages. We've got some enrollment declines. You know, we've got a lot of stuff going on in our educational sector. So who better to have talk about the drama going on and how we're going to embrace it here in Connecticut than our very own Fran Rabinowitz. She is the executive director of the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents. Back on the show. Hey, Fran, how are you?
Hi, Melissa. Thank you for having me. It's a beautiful day, and so, you know, I'm trying to look on the bright side.
I love that. Yes. And I would love to look on the bright side as well. I also kind of want to just talk a little bit, though, about I want to understand this funding and if, in fact, we have a lot of school districts in Connecticut impacted by this, because, again, this is a national story. But I did want to see, you know, what we're hearing about for Connecticut schools once this expires. It sounds like it's going to expire probably by next month. What can you tell us?
Well, I can tell you that we are absolutely facing a fiscal cliff in our school districts. Now, the final ESSER dollars will expire in September of 24. But in many of our districts did not receive a huge amount of money, and they have already used all of their dollars. And I am seeing on the eastern part of the state, I'm beginning to see it centrally, and even in southern Connecticut, I'm starting to see major layoffs. You know, people saying we can't sustain our staff. You know, we're letting them go. And in this time, that is incredibly painful for everyone, especially our kids.
So, Fran, help me to understand when they say technology investments. Here in Connecticut, we had some districts, even here in Fairfield and New Haven counties, where there were schools that just did not have, for example, broadband. They were not going to be able to connect with their kids online and do virtual schooling or all the necessities needed to keep kids from falling behind during the pandemic. So is that what we're sort of looking at? Are we going back to that kind of a reality? Or are we talking about other investments?
Well, we're talking all kinds of investments. We're talking, you know, whatever a school district has in their budget, all of it will be impacted, but certainly technology. I mean, I always worried about that as a superintendent. We would get a grant and you could implement, just like we did during COVID. The governor did some wonderful things. The Dalio Foundation did some wonderful things, but that's gone away. And those computers and those the laptops are getting old, the Chromebooks, and, you know, having the money to sustain that, having the money to build a good infrastructure that allows Wi-Fi in all classrooms is very expensive. And I do worry that we will not be able to maintain it in the way that we did during COVID. I know that sounds crazy, but I can tell you that it is, it's going to erode because of our budget.
So Fran Rabinowitz is here, Executive Director of the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents. We're talking about some of the money that came from the federal program under the CARES Act. And it was really there for K through 12 school districts across the country to help them if they were less equipped to make technology investments. That's going to expire soon. That money is going to go away. As I mentioned beforehand, Fran, staffing shortages, enrollment declines, those are also going on at the the same time, and it's really making some really difficult decisions for these schools to kind of figure out how do we make ends meet. In fact, there's a new national report, and some of the key findings I found from it include that 47% of district respondents in the country report staffing shortages. I know we have them here in Connecticut, affecting their ability to adopt and integrate technology needed to perform effectively. 35% of the respondents believe that when the funds run out, they will not have the funding available to support technology investments. And a third of the respondents say that not keeping up with technology is going to hold their district back. How much of Connecticut would you say, you know, ballpark, of course, is really going to be impacted by this? Because, again, when you look at these national polls, you know, a third of the schools, that's pretty significant. But here in Connecticut, how many districts are really going to be impacted?
Well, I would say, you know, we have 169 school public school districts. I would say certainly the 36 districts that are alliance districts will be severely impacted. Those are our most challenged districts. But I'm telling you, on the eastern part of the state, and even up in the western part where there are small districts, rural districts, they are already impacted. I think, to be honest with you, Melissa, I think all districts will be impacted to one degree or another, even your southwestern, southern Fairfield County districts. We're all being impacted because it was a large influx of dollars during COVID, rightfully so. But in many cases, municipalities during that time did not fund the operating budget. So a lot of this money was used for operating. So when that goes away, the dollars have to increase in order to just maintain the operating budget. We're not talking fluff here. We're not talking frills. Technology is not it is not an add-on. Technology is an integral part of getting our kids ready for the workplace.
We have Fran Rabinowitz on the show, Executive Director of the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents. There is a federal program under the CARES Act, which was really designed to make sure that schools, elementary and secondary schools, had the tools they need technology-wise. They had the investments they needed to make sure they were operating efficiently, whether that was broadband, whether that was making sure they had the Chromebooks, you know, whatever they needed to make sure that if kids needed to learn from home, they had to get the access to homework or assignments not to fall behind, that they had it. Well, that's going to expire very soon. That program is going away in a matter of weeks. And of course, K through 12 school districts here and across the country are panicking. What in the world are we going to do? You know what I find really interesting about this, Fran? How is this possible? How in 2023 do we have school districts still not up to par with technology? And I'm not blaming the school districts. I want to be very clear. How, especially in a state like Connecticut, where we are one of the highest tax states in the country, and we are living in a surplus, right? We got this surplus of funding. How do we still have schools that don't have great Wi-Fi or don't have up-to-date Chromebooks? How is that possible?
It just should not be the case. And you know how I feel about that. I mean, I remember walking into Bridgeport as the interim superintendent and having plenty of Chromebooks for the kids, but no Wi-Fi. So
that's insane.
Unusable. Yeah. I mean, and for me, technology is now just an integral part of our instructional program. It has to be maintained. It has to be grown to keep up with what is happening in the world. So I do think that the legislature is in session till June 7th. There is a funding bill on the books that would, it's 5003, would allow for funding to all of our school districts. All of them would receive an increase in education cost sharing money. I think the bill is over $300 million. But I do believe that that is a necessity. It's a necessity for the state to fund our, to help fund our schools. You know, and we've been saying this for a very long time, but it's got to continue. And there's got to be a consistent funding of technology, a consistent funding of staffing, because when grants come and grants go, staff goes and technology goes and many other resources as well. It's not acceptable.
And Fran, I think if I can remember correctly, because now we're dating back to 2020, I think you and I talked about this. And one of the biggest fears you had was, that's great that we have the money now, but how do we keep this sustainable when the money goes away? And it's so true. Here we are. Here we are 3 years later. We're going to enter into a brand new school year, and you're about to tell me that there are school districts, even in Fairfield County, where, good Lord, the amount of money flowing out of that is crazy, that there are school districts that still don't have solid Wi-Fi, that don't have up-to-date Chromebooks. That's just, how do you even accurately teach people in this generation without that? I just don't know how that's possible.
You absolutely cannot. And for us to grow, I mean, even just teaching them with present day technology, but for us to grow and be and make our students knowledgeable of what is possible. I mean, I can think of a million things. I mean, you know, kids can learn world languages. We can go online. We can do all kinds of wonderful things, but not if you don't have sustainable technology. Mm-hmm. And frankly, Melissa, in the most challenged districts like Bridgeport, like Norwalk, like Stanford, it's hard to come by. Do you know what I mean?
That's insane.
It's hard to sustain that funding. And that was always my issue.
It's interesting though, Fran, and I'm going to ask you this last question before I let you go. We're investing a lot of money in HVAC for the schools, which I understand. I'm not in disagreement with that. I mean, I grew up in Fairfield, where I watched McKinley be one of the first schools in the country get torn down for mold. So I'm good with this. I understand HVAC, air conditioning, heating, all that. Why are we willing to dump all this money into the school buildings? And yet, I don't know if there's a lot of support behind legislation 5003. I'm not sure. I don't know enough about it. But if this doesn't pass, what in the world does that say? That we just are kind of archaic? We only care about in-person? We're just ignoring the fact that there's a lot that we could be doing with online and with technology? Like, that to me sends a very mixed message. Either we care about education to the fullest, or just the parts that we personally feel are important. And I'm saying from, like, the governor and from the legislature's point of view, do we care about all of education or just a section of it?
Yeah, you know, interestingly enough, I did text the governor yesterday, which I seldom do, but I have major concerns about where we're going to go after this legislative session and how we're going to sustain education. And he answered me immediately, and I have a meeting coming up with him, and that will be the subject of the meeting.
Okay, will you keep me in the loop?
I will.
Who's better than you, Fran Rabinowitz?
I will.
Keep me posted.
Yeah, and I mean, I was so surprised that he answered me so quickly. I know he has a lot on his plate, so I know it's important to him too, but we've got to find sustainable answers.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing is that was his biggest concern when the pandemic happened. Before we really knew what COVID was going to mean, his number one concern was that schools would be shut down and that kids would fall behind. I know he cares about education, but this is...
He does care.
He
cares deeply.
I mean,
I'm one person, and he answered me almost immediately and said, yes, please set up a meeting.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to seeing what comes out of that meeting, so please keep me posted.
I will, Melissa. And thank you for making this a priority.
Absolutely. And Fran, I appreciate, especially going into a holiday weekend, thank you for making the time to come on. I really do appreciate your time.
Anytime, Melissa. You know that.
Thank you. Thank you.
I love to talk about education with you. You've got all the right topics and the right questions. Thank you.
I appreciate that, Fran. Also, side note, Fran, I don't know if he told you yet, but your son is expected to come on my show on Tuesday morning. Did he tell you that?
No.
Yes.
He's supposed to be coming on.
Yes, he's already confirmed. I'm just waiting for the second guest to join him. So he's supposed to come on my show in the 8 o'clock hour on Tuesday. So go bother him about
it. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
I will bother him this weekend about it.
Do it, yes. You know, poke some fun at him. Make him nervous, you know? Because
make him very nervous.
You should. He's coming in studio, too, so he's got to look me in the eye while I ask him questions, so.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. I love it. I can't wait to bother him this weekend.
Excellent. Yeah, see, I'll have you do that, and I'll just sit back and see how it all goes. But, Fran, thank you. Seriously, again, I always appreciate your time. You're the best.
I appreciate being here. Thank you, Melissa. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Fran Rabinowitz, who is, again, the executive director of the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents, right here on WICC. As you know, May is Stroke Awareness Month, and doctors at Hartford HealthCare's St. Vincent's Medical Center are highlighting a new breakthrough treatment saving the lives of stroke victims. And joining us to tell us all the details about EVT, which we'll break that down for you this morning, is neurosurgeon Dr. Ackley Zechi, who is here with Hartford HealthCare's Neuroscience Institute at St. Vincent's Medical Center. Dr. Zechi, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. So tell us, it sounds like there was actually a treatment, my understanding from Jocelyn and your team there, is there was actually a life-saving treatment for a 46-year-old from Bridgeport earlier this month. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. So St. Vincent Medical Center just built a new, what we call biplane suite, which is a special procedure room that is specifically designed for minimally invasive neurological procedures. And we're able now to treat a variety of disorders and conditions that affect the blood vessels of the brain. And one of them is a stroke. And in a stroke, there's a blood clot that blocks a major blood vessel in the brain. And now we're able to repuncture in the groin to access the blood vessels in the brain and retrieve this blood clot. And the goal is to restore the blood flow and prevent a permanent sequelae. And one of our patients had a great outcome following this procedure earlier this month.
Wow. So what is it? What is the actual procedure?
So the procedure is essentially the patient is placed on a table, and then we access the blood vessels through a needle puncture in the groin, and we use a catheter, which is a plastic tube that we navigate using image guidance all the way inside the vessels of the brain. And we use this biplane machine, which is a new sophisticated equipment that uses X-ray image guidance. And we're able to look at the vessels of the brain, understand their anatomy, and then we use a variety of devices to catch the clot that is blocking the vessel, and we remove it from the vessels of the brain. And all of this is done, again, without a surgery, without an incision, simply through a needle stick in the groin.
Okay, so this is like 3D imaging? Or could you, I mean, what does EVT stand for?
EVT stands for endovascular therapy. So that means going through the blood vessels and removing a blood clot. And again, we use X-rays for this. We use image guidance. And all of this is done from outside the patient's body. And we look at these images through a screen. And we're able to guide our devices and our material through this image guidance.
Wow. That's amazing. And again, we have neurosurgeon Dr. Ackley Zechi here, who is with the Hartford HealthCare's Neuroscience Institute over at St. Vincent's Medical Center. And we're talking about this treatment that my understanding is it's pinpointing almost aneurysms in the brain, right?
Right. So we're able to treat more than strokes. There are different types of strokes. Some of them are caused by a blockage in the brain. Some of them are causing brain bleeds, and one of the causes of brain bleeds is brain aneurysms. Mm. So we are also able to treat these brain aneurysms, again, through this same technique. Classically, aneurysms were treated with open surgery. We required to make an incision and open the skull and place a clip at the base of these aneurysms, which are bulging on the blood vessel, which can bleed. Nowadays, we don't need to do that for most of these aneurysms. We're, again, able to treat all of these by accessing the blood vessels through a needle stick in the groin and repairing the aneurysms from the inside, again, using the different devices that we have. And again, all of this is done looking at a screen and using this highly sophisticated biplane machine.
Dr. Zecchi, I'm curious, is this only for aneurysms? When you talk about, you know, being able to pinpoint those, what about tumors? Are tumors still too big, too much to have to still do, you know, like a full procedure of cutting open?
Right. So brain tumors are still, most of them treated with surgery.
Okay.
Where we still do open surgery. It depends on the tumors. Typically, we have a multidisciplinary reunion with other specialists, and we decide what's the best course of treatment for every patient. But most patients still require open surgery for tumors. This room, this endovascular suite, is really to treat disorders of the blood vessels, but certainly other conditions still require open neurosurgery.
How often would you say, Dr. Zecchi, you need to have this kind of a procedure done for stroke patients? Like, do we have any kind of statistics to kind of back up the need for this and why it's so prevalent?
So stroke is very common. Unfortunately, it's the number one cause of disability in the United States, and every minute, 1 to 500 patients are suffering from a stroke. So certainly, unfortunately, only 10% of patients who present to our emergency room are eligible for mechanical thrombectomy. We're looking at increasing stroke awareness so that patients present earlier to the emergency department so they can benefit from these time-sensitive treatments. And certainly studies have shown that if you're having a large stroke and you undergo mechanical thrombectomy, that's your best chance to have a good neurological recovery.
And I also was reading that doctors at St. Vincent's are actually among the first in Connecticut to use this kind of state-of-the-art imaging. Is that intimidating to know that?
Well, it's exciting and very proud to be among the first ones to use it. Other hospitals also have this machine, but certainly we have the latest cutting-edge technology and very proud to be part of the St. Vincent's family.
So who qualifies for this procedure and how long does it take?
So patients that show up within 24 hours of their onset of symptoms, or sometimes we use from the time last known well, meaning some patients unfortunately wake up with a new neurological symptom. But up to 24 hours is the main criteria. We use another clinical criteria, an imaging criteria. Essentially, it needs to be a blockage in a large vessel of the brain, and there needs to be significant brain that is at risk and can be salvaged. But essentially, we're pretty much inclusive for most patients who show up within 24 hours.
Neurosurgeon Dr. Ackley Zecchi, thank you so much for sharing this information. And I'm so glad that it is being done successfully to help stroke victims right here in our listening area. And I'm sure we'll be seeing more about this in the near future.
Thank you, Melissa. Maybe if I would just want to finish by saying that everyone should be aware of the signs and symptoms of stroke. May Stroke Awareness Month. In stroke, we say that time is brain. So we use the acronym BFAST. B stands for balance. E stands for eyes. So if you notice a sudden change in your vision or double vision, F stands for face. So if you notice a change in your face, an asymmetry or droopy face, A stands for arms. So if you notice a weakness in an arm or leg or numbness in arm or leg, S stands for speech, which means if you notice a change in your speech, word fighting difficulty or slurred speech, and T stands for time. So call 911. Do not wait it out. That's the best thing that you can do to save your life or one of your dear ones.
Absolutely. So important to always remember, be fast. And again, thank you, Dr. Zecchi, for what you do and for coming on the show.
Thank you, Melissa.
Absolutely. Again, neurosurgeon Dr. Ackley Zecchi is the with Hartford HealthCare's Neuroscience Institute at St. Vincent's Medical Center right here on WACC in perfect timing for Stroke Awareness Month, which is the month of May.
What's happening in Washington and how it affects you? Melissa in the Morning welcomes Congressman Jim Himes to WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Congressman Himes, do you even remember who I am? I feel like it's
been...
Hey,
good morning, Melissa. You're right. It's been way, way, way too long. No. You don't write. You don't call.
I know. I'm sorry. Well, you know, you're a busy guy, too, though. My gosh, you are traveling all over. But, yeah, it's just been a crazy spring, it feels like. How are you?
Good, good. Fingers crossed on some sort of debt ceiling deal. We don't need that crazy to go wrong. Mm-hmm. And so I'm back in Connecticut looking forward to a whole bunch of Memorial Day parades, but aware of the fact that I might need to jump back on that train and hopefully get that deal done to avoid unnecessary hassle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you knew that we were going to talk about that today, right? You knew that was coming.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, Reuters actually came out with an article that seemed pretty promising, at least this morning, within the last hour. It says that President Biden and top congressional Republican Kevin McCarthy are closing in on a deal that would raise the government's $31.4 trillion debt ceiling for 2 years while capping spending on most items. What can you tell us at this point about where we're at and certainly some of the concerns that people have if those are going to be addressed, of course, Social Security being probably at the top of the list?
Yeah, yeah. A couple things to say about that, Melissa. First of all, there will be no changes to Social Security. In fact, anybody on Social Security knows that they got a nice cost of living adjustment a number of months ago. And so that program is, you know, we're going to need to think about it in the long run. But that program is fine. It will not be touched. No changes to Social Security or Medicare. I am getting lots of positive vibes from the people who are in the room with the president and others that there is going to be some deal done. The funny thing about this, Melissa, it's going to be a very small deal. You know, they're talking about taking $10 billion from the IRS, which got, you know, $80 billion in a bill last year, moving it around here and there. Melissa, that's a rounding error on the federal budget. You know, they're talking about capping spending levels. Spending levels are pretty high right now, right? Because mm-hmm. we're still doing some programs that were associated with COVID. So my point is that if a deal gets done, it's going to be a pretty small deal. Won't have major impact. And by the way, you know, that may irritate some people, but what I find with people who want spending cuts is that they're really excited about spending cuts that don't affect them, right? That's a whole dynamic that is kind of interesting. But anyway, my larger point about this, Melissa, is that, you know, the debt ceiling has been around for decades. It has never done anything under Democratic presidents, Republican presidents, Democratic Congresses, Republican Congresses to reduce the debt. And what it does is every couple of years or every couple of months, we have this, you know, months-long period where we worry about whether we're going to wreck the economy because, you know, we might not pay Social Security out or pay our soldiers or pay the interest on our debt. And so my hope is that we not only sort of get rid of this for a couple of years, but eventually we get rid of the whole thing because I'm in Congress. I believe in doing legislation and compromising, but not because you're doing it, you know, with the time bomb ticking on the table in front of you.
It does feel that way. Congressman Himes, I feel like every spring this threat of default comes up. It's like clockwork. And it always feels like our backs are up against the wall, that all of these things that we rely on are going to halt. And then it's like in the nick of time, they came up with a deal. And it really does feel like a false narrative. And for, you know, us locals here in Connecticut, we're kind of like, wait, what in the world is even going on down there? And like, how at risk are we of losing a bunch of stuff? So could you, I mean, even reiterate that a little bit? Like when we say that, you know, like economists warning of dire consequences, including default, like how likely even is that?
You know, if you give yourself the opportunity to default, there's always some risk that you might. And yeah, it's hard to overstate the catastrophe that would be. You know, a bazillion years ago, I was in banking, right? The entire banking structure, the stock market, capital markets, all relies on the assumption that the United States Treasury is rock solid, that it would never not pay its debt. And if you yank that assumption out from underneath the whole system, crazy stuff happens. And people say, well, how would that affect me? If you're trying to get a mortgage, your mortgage rate's going to be a lot higher. It's already pretty high. It's going to be a lot higher. You know, your 401k and pension plans would be devastated. So, and for what? And for what? To do the things that we're supposed to do without the unpinned grenade on the table, right? you know, we have a whole system, Melissa. If you want to pass something in the Congress, you get, you know, you and I remember Schoolhouse Rock. You pass it in the House, you pass it in the Senate, and you get the president to sign it. And yes, that's hard. It's supposed to be hard. What's not in the system is, you know, every time we roll around to the debt ceiling, you get to present your list of ransom demands to whoever's president. And, you know, traditionally, this happened three times, and you're going to hear from the Democrat in me right now. This happened three times under Donald Trump. And there's a quote, a wonderful quote of Donald Trump saying, oh, you would never use this to negotiate. It's sacred. And we didn't. We Democrats did the responsible thing and didn't say, here's our list of 20 things you have to do or we're going to blow up the economy by defaulting. But what will happen, Melissa, is eventually we'll learn, right? And the next time there's a Republican president, the Democrats are going to say, look, they got a ransom list the last time and we'll do it. And that's just – that's not the way this system should work. So my hope is that after this little adventure, this whole thing goes away and we get down to, you know, serious business and real things.
And, you know, we're talking to Congressman Himes about, of course, the debt ceiling. And I was just looking at a report, just more of like a straightforward fact report, not so much opinionated, but looking at how often it has been raised. When you look at some of the data here, it says since 1960, Congress has increased the ceiling 78 times, most recently in 2021. 49 of these increases were implemented under Republican presidents, 29 under Democratic presidents. So it sounds like it's pretty common that we almost go through this every single time. Like, it seems like this is just sort of the pattern we're in. So what is the likelihood, Congressman Himes, that we eventually do away with a debt ceiling?
Well, if we don't get a deal done in the next week, Melissa, and there's, you know, really ugly activity in the stock market, if there's a crash or something, that'll, I think, raise that as a possibility. But it's just so silly, you know, and I'll tell you, I've been doing this a little while. I get so tired of people telling me, well, this is a Democratic problem or a Republican problem. You know, let me tell you how silly this is. How do you get a deficit? A deficit is why you have debt, right? Because you need to fund the deficit. Mm-hmm. So how do you get a deficit? You do one of two things. You spend too much or you tax too little. Every one of the towns in Connecticut knows that they need to tax to get to the level of spending. Now, we do both of those things. We spend too much and we tax too little. And as it happens, the Republicans tend to like to tax too little and the Democrats tend to like to spend too much. And so when this becomes, you turn on TV and, oh, this is the Democrats' fault or the Republicans' fault, guess what? You know, both parties are complicit in this. And what we need to do is acknowledge that when we pass a tax bill that is too little or a spending bill that is too late, that's when we're creating the deficit. And each and every one of my colleagues needs to raise their right hand and says, you know what, I love these tax cuts. I'm going back to my district and I'm going to say we cut corporate taxes from 35% to 21% like the Republicans did under Donald Trump. And I'm really happy about it. And, oh, by the way, it's going to add $2 trillion to the deficit. That would be honest, but that's not where we are. You know, we do all this fun stuff. We spend too much and tax too little. And then when the bill comes, like at the end of a big meal in a restaurant, we're like, oh, look at this bill. Should I be paying it? No, I don't think I'm going to pay it. And that's not worthy of who we are as Americans, Melissa.
Well, Congressman Himes, I really appreciate your perspective and we'll see what ends up happening. In the meantime, I hope you do enjoy your Memorial Day weekend and we will talk again soon.
All right. Great talking with you. Take care.
Thank you. Congressman Jim Himes here on WICC.